Welcome to My Worst Date. I'm Cassie.
I'm Keegan.
I'm Christina.
And today we have a very special guest. We have Katie Earl Hogan here. I've known you for a little while. You are a musician. You're currently with The Blushes, but you were formerly with The Mowglies. And I'm so excited to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to get together and talk with the gals. I love it.
It's real. We were actually just talking about girl relationships and how important they are. And I actually was super excited to hear that you are with an all-girl band. Tell us a little bit about that. Like what, you know, that dynamic.
Oh, it's so much fun. In 2021, October, I reconnected with a couple of girlfriends of mine, Katie Rose and Lori Dorfman. We grew up together doing musical theater.
Amazing.
In the Valley.
Nice.
And, you know, life, college, all those things kind of brought us to different places. And then 2020 happened and, you know, as everybody kind of experienced, it was like major life shifts.
Yeah.
So, you know, my band took a break. Katie moved back from Paris where she was living.
No big deal.
Lori had like, you know, reconsidered what she was doing as an artist and all of these big life changes happened. It kind of like brought us all together in this cosmic event.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like, are we a band? Like one day we just kind of started playing some music and just kind of started writing a song on a whim really casually.
Nice.
And we're like, wait a minute, like let's pursue this. And we wrote a song together and we loved it. And it was just like super refreshing. Lori's always been an artist, doing a lot of solo stuff and a lot of acting. And Katie's always been a solo artist. She's been making music since she was a teenager. And I'd been in the Mowglies for the last, you know, decade and a half or something. And so this new chemistry between the three of us was just so refreshing and it felt new and it felt energizing. And we were like, let's roll with this. And it's just been really a pleasure.
That's been awesome.
Such a joy.
It comes through in your music too. Like it sounds like you three are having so much fun and it's so just upbeat and joyful. And I love it.
We love that. It's definitely a joyful experience and it's empowering. And, you know, it's just everything you would ever want from this like sisterhood and this kind of girl group. And everybody takes care of each other and looks out for each other. And, you know, we have a really good time. It's really, really fun.
I love that.
Yeah. That's awesome. I'm super jealous too, because I've been in bands for years and years and my experience has been always with guys. I've never gotten to collaborate in that way with females. And I just, I imagine it's a much different experience.
It really is. It's so fun. I, you know, 2020, if I were to go back and like read through my journal, I was journaling a lot. And I think if I were to go back and read through it, there were like so many times where I was just like, you know, I want to make music with women and for women. And I've spent so much of my adult life so far, you know, making music that, you know, on the business end, empowered men, like my male managers, my male booking agents, my male bandmates. Yep. And, you know, I don't know. I was just like, what if, you know, a woman was taking 10% of everything I made? You know, what if a woman was on stage with me and, you know, sharing this platform? And, you know, I just kind of fantasized about it. And I thought, you know, God, that's like the direction I really want to move in. And I don't know. It's kind of like the power of manifestation.
You manifested it. Yeah. You sure did.
That's amazing. I totally believe in that, man.
Well, other big news too, that you're knocked up.
I got knocked up finally, you know, at 35 years old. I just turned 36. They call it a geriatric pregnancy.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, my God. I can't even.
It's wild.
And it's so...
I was like, excuse me, ma'am?
We've had this conversation before, but all of that science is also so outdated.
It's super outdated. And I feel like in places like New York, LA, London, it's like... nobody even starts their families till they're 40.
I genuinely feel like whenever I hear of somebody in Los Angeles who's in their 20s
and
getting
pregnant,
I'm like, a teen pregnancy.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Are you okay? Right.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm concerned about you. Yeah. You know, you don't know how to react. I had a friend once who like told me that they were pregnant and I'm like, I
Do you need consoling?
How do you feel about it?
How do you feel about
it? No, I personally am super grateful that it's happening at this time in my life. It's like I got my 20s to myself. I had you know, my early 30s to kind of settle into being in my 30s. And it just feels like a really appropriate time for me. Personally.
Perfect. Excellent.
It happens if and when it's meant to for each individual.
That's exactly right.
I feel like this stage of my life is the right time. And I'm really grateful that, you know, I had all of these years up until now. To really
prepare,
be myself and to work on my relationship with my partner and with myself. And, you know, it, for me, this has been the right timing.
That's awesome. Sure. Yeah. I think that there's, I mean, as somebody who got pregnant at 18, childbred. I mean, it's a much different place in your life. You're absolutely right.
So how old is your kid?
25.
Wow.
I know, it's wild, right?
You do not look old enough.
Thank you.
Amazing.
No, but I think you're absolutely right. I think that there's so much to be gained by waiting until like you're in your 30s.
Yeah.
You're so much more settled in who you are. You're going to be so much more patient. I think that's the thing about
the patience, I think, is pretty major for sure.
Absolutely. I think that's the one thing I really wish I had. But at 18, you're not ready to be somebody else's parent. I don't think most people would say.
To have more energy chasing that kid around.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm already tired.
Yeah.
So there's that.
You know? Yeah. I think that it has a lot to do with just, I do. I wish I had more patience with my child. I think that you do have more energy. That is maybe the trade-off, but I think I would have been a better parent had I waited.
Well, you know what the beauty in your situation is now you get to be like the coolest youngest grandparent.
I honestly am excited about that point in my life.
Like, my son's not ready. A grandparent, I'm going to be genuinely like, I'm going to be old. I'm going to be like, okay, bring me the baby.
Yeah.
But you know, you get to be like, yeah, you can still like go to Disneyland and stuff. It's going to be great.
I'm actually going to go home right now and tell my son.
Yeah.
Get on this.
Oh man. You know, I know that I'm not ready to be a parent because for two nights in a row, my cat has kept me up and I'm like, so grumpy about it.
Yeah.
Like my cat has just been sitting outside just screaming its head off and it's just like, come cuddle with me. And I'm like, oh, fuck's sake.
Yeah. You're like, you little shit.
I know. Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not there yet in my life.
I definitely feel like before I got pregnant, I had kind of the opposite experience where I was laying in bed and it was like, my dog was like in my side. Mm-hmm. And my cat was like, and I was like super uncomfortable. And I was like, just trying to stay still. And I was like, okay, if I'm willing to be this uncomfortable for my pets, maybe I'm ready to be a parent.
Yeah, there you go.
That 100% is my current life right now. Maybe I am ready to be a grandparent because the way that because it's getting colder here in LA, and like the way that my pets have been like snuggled into me under blankets, and I'm like, well, I guess this is where I die because I can't move.
No, I love it. I love when it gets cold and the pets are like body heat. In the summer, they don't want to be near me. In the winter, they're all about it. And I'm like, yes, come to me.
Yeah, exactly.
For it. Your kid is going to be the coolest, too, because you and Josh are just so great and so much fun.
Thank you. You know, that's the hope. We do hope that we have a cool kid. But also, we're like, you know, maybe he'll go the other way entirely. And it'll be like, he's like, fuck music, math, and science. You know what I mean?
That'd be awesome.
Honestly,
my son.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I think that's
like,
a great.
You know, you have two artist parents. He could just be like, no.
He's like, actually, STEM is more my thing.
Right.
So.
What if he's like, actually, sports?
Sport.
Yeah.
There you go. You know?
I don't know how to connect with you there.
go get the whole thing.
We're going to have to get you a little closer to your Oklahoma family for that sport. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I'll be at the games.
Yeah, sure.
Cheering when everybody else is cheering.
Yeah, exactly.
In
exactly.
your tumbler, you're like,
I'll be like total wine mom. On the soccer field.
It makes me think of that gif or whatever of Josh Brolin or whatever doing the chair.
The chair, yeah.
He's like,
Dick settled it.
Mommy wine time.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so
right.
How was it touring with your partner for all those years?
It was really special. We actually were in the Mowglis together for like 4 years before anything ever even happened between us. Like, I would have never... At the beginning of the Mowgli's journey, I never would have been like, oh yeah, I can totally see myself marrying and having a child with Josh. It was just like not even on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And however, then, he's like,
I mean, honestly, no. Oh. Like, we were just, there was nothing. We were friends. There was, like, nothing going on. And then when we started touring, it was like, we just really vibed. It was like, we'd be in a new city and I'd be like, I'm going to go find a coffee shop. You'd be like, oh, I want to go find coffee too. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're on a little coffee date. And it was like, I'm going to go on a walk. Like, I feel like I've been in the van too long. He's like, yeah, I want to move my legs too. And it was just like, we were aligned in how we wanted to spend our time off stage.
Yeah.
Mm. And, you know, all of a sudden we were sharing with each other and we were going on walks together and getting coffee together and bonding. And it just kind of happened. It was very natural. And then once it happened, it was like, okay, it's on.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It is on.
And and then it was just a really special experience because we were traveling to all these new cities and we were both experiencing all these milestones, but together. And I think that it can, I totally understand how it can be difficult to have a partner in a band. And at this point, our band was really growing and experiencing a lot of really special kind of milestones. We were on late night TV for the first time and we were, you know, booking these really amazing shows and tours and getting like songs and movies. And
that's,
you
so
know,
rad,
when you can share that with somebody, it's really fun. If my partner was at home and it's like, you're on the phone, you're like, oh, the show was fucking amazing tonight. Yeah. All these people were screaming for us. Tomorrow we're going to be on Leno. It's like, they're like, okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fuck you. I'm at home watching the cat, you know?
And yeah. Yeah.
It was really a blessing, if you will, to be able to have those experiences together.
Yeah.
It eliminated any like jealousy or weird feelings.
Right.
That I totally think could be natural. You know, if you have this partner who's going to premieres and going to Grammy parties and has an event tonight, but we can't bring guests because we're not that famous.
Yeah. Jeez,
and
yeah.
So, you know, we got to do a lot of that together. And a lot of our band members and our peers and our tour mates, it's like they'd be like, oh, yeah, my wife's at home and I haven't seen her in 4 weeks or my wife's flying out. It's the first time I've seen her. And, you know, and I empathized with them because it's hard.
Yeah.
But I got to do that with my partner. And I just feel like it was really such a great experience for me. And also hopefully for him. And then also it allows us now that we're having a baby and our life is shifting. It's like, oh, well, we got to do all these things together.
Yeah.
And so we both feel really satisfied and content with our experiences and our past and really ready to move into this new chapter because it feels like a new chapter.
Yeah.
It really
does
feel like a different, like a shift.
Yeah.
That's
touring
wonderful.
Can be hard. I think, you know, there's always that thing too, where it's like, people are like, oh, you can test your relationship by traveling with someone.
Totally.
And I think that you guys got to go through some of the things that for most people could be very difficult. So you got to kind of experience those things early on. And the fact that you meshed well in that type of environment says a lot about how you were able to build your relationship.
And there was a lot of balance, finding this balance, because it was also like, you know, we had bandmates and it never wanted to be like, oh, it's this couple against us.
Versus,
like, when we had to have business talks, it was like we always tried to be very neutral and not like, well, I'm saying this because my partner's saying this. It was like we'd have to find ways to
be diplomatic.
Be diplomatic and to disagree and not make it a relationship disagreement. But it's like, okay, we're disagreeing as bandmates.
Yeah. We've had not those conversations too as friends, you know, doing this as well, where it has to be like, we might disagree on this thing and it's not a friendship thing. This is a business talk.
Yes.
This
correct.
Is a friendship talk. You know what I mean?
That's exactly.
And that is hard sometimes. I mean, I think that, you know, we definitely have come through those like struggles because it is when you are friends or when you have those relationships prior, sometimes it is hard to like navigate those roads because it can be, you know, you don't mean it to be personal, but sometimes it becomes that way because of just that natural.
And just knowing that, you're not going to agree on everything and creative differences aren't a personal attack on anybody, you know, and that's just.
I would never want him to hold back his honest feelings about our creative endeavor because he was scared of hurting my feelings as his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. I was like, well, no, this is really what I feel. And I'm not trying to hurt your feelings. Like, I know you're my boyfriend, but I think this is what's best for the thing. And, you know, we did have to find that balance. And I think that ultimately we both wanted the band to work and we wanted the relationship to work. We wanted both of those things enough that we figured it out. But
yeah,
wow.
That's huge.
It's just, I had the complete opposite situation as somebody that created with my ex-partner for like 7 years. It was absolute unending torture from T to B.
Right.
Just not being able to create with somebody, not being able to take honest feedback or without it being seen as a personal attack and just
he was very uncompromising though. Incredibly uncompromising.
Right. Yeah. And it's just, I think that that's such a great sign that not only touring, but just the business side of band and the joy that should be there in creating with your partner. It's like, if you can't find it there, I think I should have realized it sooner.
Well, there's a lot of ego that comes up with creative stuff too. And understanding, you know, okay, this is my ego talking. This isn't, you know, it's just, there's a lot of navigating, and it's a lot of, I think, to do it right and to do it well and to do it in this like non-personal way, you have to really be willing to look at yourself in a lot of ways.
Which is hard. Especially as somebody who's in the arts, because you give so much of yourself.
Yeah.
You are literally putting yourself out there.
Yes.
And so when somebody denies, dislikes, it's hard to not be like, feel like you're just, especially music.
So you hate me.
Oh, yes.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is, you're criticizing me personally.
Right.
It is hard. Yeah. Cause you know, I've been doing podcasting, theater. Now I'm working on a nonprofit and stuff like that. And it is, you present these ideas and it can feel very vulnerable to like
you
present
so
your ideas
of yourself into it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then to have somebody be like, no, not, I mean, what if we did it this way instead? And you're like, it's fine.
Okay. Okay. I just poured my whole self into it.
No big deal. No worries.
This is just an actual article on paper, but
part of me. Yeah.
But I know, Katie, you did child acting, right?
I did.
I see we have something in common because there was a specific time, we're of a similar age, and there was a specific time like in the 90s when you were pursuing acting as a child, because I did it too, where you had these headshots that were like comp cards.
Oh, yes.
I have one. It's a comp card. For some reason, they were like, this child actor needs a comp card with several pictures on it, and they're all in black and white, and it's going to feature either a bucket hat or like a blossom hat.
Overalls for me.
Overalls. Oh my God. Yeah. Yes. And cutest. I've seen you post pictures of your headshots. So cute. But what
a business ripoff. Wow. Honestly.
Oh my gosh, they are not cheap. I remember my mom.
They are not cheap.
Okay, like, you know, we've got to get you headshots. This is like, you know, no dinner for a week or whatever.
Yeah. They're so expensive. They're still so expensive.
They're very expensive.
Like my actor friends who are still like out there like doing it for real, I'm like, you can drop easily $1,000 on headshots.
Good headshots.
So
I'm in the wrong business. I need to get my camera out.
Honestly, we should just start like a Barbizon. I was in John Robert Powers, actually, which was similar to Barbizon. Same thing. Like somebody walked up to my mom at a state fair and was like, your kid's really cute. Yeah. Can I interest you in...
Wasn't there one in Columbus? Like Casablanca or something?
Yes. Yeah. I remember that too. Yes.
Would you like to make money off your child's
looks? Yeah.
Look, if this kid comes out and somebody wants to pay me money to put it in a commercial, I will stage mom the hell out of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Your kid is going to inherit your dimples and be very marketable.
Well, and the thing is too, is at least you have an understanding since you grew up in it of like, you know how to navigate it probably better than maybe most people. For sure.
I mean, I was watching Game of Thrones. Do you guys watch it?
Yeah. I'm rewatching it right now.
House of the Dragon. I was watching, and it was like one of the first episodes, and there was like a newborn baby. Mm-hmm. It was like a fresh newborn baby, and I was like,
that could be my baby.
How do I get my newborn baby gigs now? I'm like, anything shooting
in May? I'm not going to lose money on this situation. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, come on.
I need to pay for these hospital bills. Like,
you got a fresh baby coming in May if anybody needs, you know, a roll pill.
Fresh baby. No, truly, because like there are infants. I think about that because I watch Call the Midwife, and I'm like, the number of newborns on that show, I'm like, they have to have somebody who is just newborn scouting.
They're little baby babies. They're just at the hospital, like, we'll take that one.
Yeah, you gotta like probably cast them before they come out.
They have to.
It's like,
yeah.
Oh, you've got a baby coming in May. We're shooting in June.
Because like, you know when they don't. You've definitely watched a movie before or a TV show where they like give birth. I was watching.
Like, that newborn like, is yes, 3 months old.
Yes, yeah. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's like aware of what's going on.
Yeah, like, that newborn has teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I had a couple large newborns, so I feel like I had those too. Yeah. It was funny. I was a surrogate. And when I had Josh.
Oh, that's amazing.
He came out and he was so big. My husband's like, you gave birth to a 3 month old.
Goodness. Yeah. But we always do a would you rather on the show. And I was thinking, since you were a child actor turned musician, we were looking into some other child actors turned musicians. Would you rather go on a date with Jared Leto or Drake?
Drake, 100%. Jared Leto is a piece of shit. Yeah. Do you guys know that?
Yeah. I mean,
do you know
he's
that?
Like, he's a cult leader.
Piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that?
I knew he was a cult leader.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a piece of shit.
He's a piece of shit. Yeah. Google it. And if anybody's listening, Google it. It's like kind of amazing to me that he hasn't been canceled yet.
Yeah.
When he was on tour with 30 Seconds to Mars, he and his brother have been pieces of shit and they take advantage of young women often. So, you know, Drake all day.
I'm not surprised.
Also, Drake is cute.
Yeah. Drake is cute.
And Degrassi, come on.
Yeah.
Aubrey.
He's Canadian too, which always is just points in my book. Like, I'm just
agreed.
Like, Drake is cute. I also feel like Jared Leto, like, too, like, pretty.
Yeah.
Pretty. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not really my.
No, aesthetic.
I'm like, Drake is like, he's like a man.
There is something about Jared Leto's eyes that make me nervous. Like, I'm just like, you staring into my soul?
He is. Yeah. He is actually. Mm-hmm. Wait a second, though. I have a question. Was he a child actor? What did he do?
Oh, when he was Jared Catalano in My So-Called Life.
Yes, My So-Called Life.
He was a teen.
Oh. But so was Drake. He was a teen.
Yeah, in Degrassi.
Got it.
Yeah.
Jimmy from Degrassi. He went through a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes, he sure did.
He went through a lot of stuff.
I didn't watch Degrassi.
Oh my gosh, you missed out.
I missed.
They go there.
They're talking about real issues.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There was a school shooting. Like this was like early 2000s.
Oh wow.
I thought it was a knife because it was Canada. Was it a gun?
No, I think there was a gun.
Oh, wow.
And they talked about STDs and they talked about rape and I mean, it was like they went and their theme was like Degrassi. It goes there.
Whoever was in the marketing room for that really nailed it. They're like, just we go there. Mm-hmm. Period.
Yeah. I was My So-Called Life. Like that. Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Totally. I was 100%. Like, it was so funny because like growing up, I grew up in like the 90s and like that was like grunge music and stuff like that. Like plaid. I mean, when I tell you I wore like to homecoming a plaid baby doll dress with plaid boxers underneath, different color, different plaid.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I was straight up all about that aesthetic. Like My So-Called Life. Claire Danes all day. That was
Jared
Catalano.
Jared Leto. Boo. Jordan Catalano. So hot. Like he was such a childhood crush.
Yeah. Okay. So what about if you had to pick between Jordan Catalano and Jimmy from Degrassi?
Harder.
Gosh, challenge. That's harder.
Much harder.
Fictional characters.
Yeah.
I do like the like sultry, like a hangout under the bleachers. About Jordan Catalano.
Would have got me. Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like Jimmy was probably a better person.
Yes.
Yeah.
In general.
Yes.
You know, but I just feel like at that stage in my life, I don't know if I was mature enough to go for the good guy.
I was not
like, no guy smoking under the bleachers.
I submit that's for where, evidence yeah, my yeah. team. Teens and
20s. Yes.
100%. Exactly.
I don't know if you heard me say I got pregnant at 18. I think we all know who I choose.
My younger self was like cigarette under the bleachers.
Yeah, people know on this show I'm notorious for making the wrong decision. Yeah. Anytime there's a bad decision to be made in these, you know, fictional situations that we put ourselves in, I'm gonna make it. Yeah.
You know what? Thank God it's fictional.
Yes. Yeah. We don't really have to do it.
I'm new to the nice guy life.
There's so much better.
It is. It really is. I'm like, wow,
they're
it's
so much better.
Relaxing,
and like,
too.
Yeah. How easy is it to be an asshole? It's like, oh, wow, you're really challenging yourself to be an asshole.
Yeah.
Like a nice guy, it's like, okay, cool. You're like doing the work. That's a lot.
Yeah. I almost admit that it is easier to be a nice guy. How much better is your life to just get along with people and like
totally
do the right thing? It
but
just
like,
feels
I feel
so much
like
better.
Guys, just like assholes, like it's like a default to just be like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like,
It is kind of easier to be a piece of shit and selfish.
I think it is too, because it's so baseline, like lizard brain.
True.
Just like not putting in any work. Yeah. I think. But I mean, I definitely find it easier to be a nice person but I guess that's because I have a conscience, because
we play consequences.
And if I'm mean to somebody, even if it was deserving, the way that will keep me up at night for the next like week, being like, oh God, I really shouldn't have snapped at that person like that.
I look at like the way culture has kind of trained us with our like gender roles. It's like men can be assholes and they're like, they're leaders. And like women, if we're assholes, it's like, she's a fucking bitch and she's hard to work with. Get her offset.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? True. But men, they're leaders. They're demanding. They know what they want.
And women are divas.
This is bullshit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I feel like, I respect the hell out of women that can like find that balance and be like, I'm going to ask for what I need and be firm about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't care if you think I'm a bitch. I'm not being a bitch. I'm just, I'm stating my needs. And there's nothing bitchy about stating your needs.
Yeah.
But men can just be like, live life, get me a coffee. And they're like, wow, he's a really firm leader. I'm going to get him a coffee. And it's like, you know, so we've kind of been like,
would you ever mind?
If you're going past the kitchen and it's soup's convenient.
Yeah. Or like, I'll get you a coffee. Yeah. But I'll do it for you. Yeah. So,
and then they bring it to you and it's not the coffee you wanted. And you're like, this is fine.
It's fine. Actually.
Fine. Yeah. No. This is real dairy. Great.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. You're like, I'll see you in the bathroom.
Yeah. I'll just deal with it. Yeah. So, you know, maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Yeah. Let's stop being these people, huh? Yeah. Stop being pleasers. Let's start.
It's hard. I am like people pleaser tendencies in a real way. And it has actually like hindered my life. Yeah. In a serious way for a long time. And I've tried, and it's hard to hit that balance because I do like being kind. I want to be kind to people. I want to go out of my way to be nice to people, but not at the expense of my own well-being and my own needs. It's very difficult to strike that balance.
Right.
And having boundaries and making sure your needs are met, like it actually is a kind thing to do, because then you can show up as the best, happiest, most content version of yourself. Like when you put all of your needs second for other people, it's like, I think it can create resentment.
Yes. Yeah.
And, and resenting people's not nice either.
No,
you know what I mean?
It's true.
Yeah.
So we have a student, we teach some arts classes, and we have a student who always, I mean, she's a teenager. She's like 15 or 16 and she always apologizes. She raises her hand and I call on her and she goes, sorry, I just have a question. Sorry, I just,
I do that.
I'm like, you know what I'm working on with you?
Yeah.
You need to stop being sorry for asking for what you need.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to be sorry about, girl. Like, stop it.
Guilty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, guilty.
Yeah. I don't know where that came from, but I don't know a lot of women our age who don't use the word sorry.
I mean, she's a teenager.
Almost
so
constantly.
It's perpetuating. Yeah. I hate that for
her. And every time she says it, I'm like, nope, you don't have to be sorry. What do you need?
This is what I'm here for. You're
ask,
in class.
Ask for your, you know.
Yeah. It's a default. It's a default for sure. The number of times my boss even is like, you don't have to say sorry. And I'm like, I know, like deep down,
and then you say sorry for saying sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Well, there's not. It's not just sorry. The amount of like verbal qualifiers that women use in their language is astounding.
Yeah, if that makes sense, is one that I do all the time.
Yeah,
like, does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, because I'm just like, I want to make extra sure that like, maybe in case I sounded stupid.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Right. That makes sense. One is always one that bothers me a lot. Like when I would be in a seminar or something and somebody's like, does that make sense? I'm like, yeah, I understand English. Of course it makes sense. Like, you know, and to me, I almost get like triggered in the other direction. I was like, stop saying that. Like,
And you're like,
I'm not dumb.
I'm trying to make sure that
I know
I made sense.
So when I catch myself,
not that you can't understand me.
Right.
Yeah. Cause I do that a lot, or I'll say, if that makes sense, you know, and I write it down even like in whenever I'm like sending people things, I'll say, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'm like, of course it makes sense. sense. Right. It is English. I know that, but yeah. I have so much like self-doubt that's been like drilled into me.
Or like
I'm
exclamation like, points. You're yes. like, hi.
Yes.
I have some emails. Needs.
Yeah. Yes.
Is this okay?
And then you have to go back, reread the email and take some of them out.
You're like, yes. I sound insane.
Yeah.
I sound completely question mark, not an exclamation point.
We're not like at a question mark and three exclamation points. Like I don't need to be that fucking excited about asking you if it's okay that I'm like running late or whatever.
When I'm being passive aggressive at my job or somebody's really annoying me, what I do is I take the exclamation point off of the thanks in my sign off. Because usually it's thanks, bitch. Exclamation point, Keegan. But if I'm not happy, then it's thanks, comma.
Ooh. So they know.
Sneaky,
I just keep it
Keegan
back.
Is
pissed.
Yeah, they're like, shit.
Oh,
I'm
comma.
So mad.
Mine's just best, comma.
Yeah. Warmest
so you're really
regards.
Mean. Sincerely.
No, it's funny because I worked for a company where the owner was British and like all their sign offs were best.
Yeah.
Just I always best, used comma. Best because I thought best was neutral. And then somebody told me like it's not, it's like me. Oh. It's like passive aggressive. Oh. And I was like, is it? I didn't ever
think British. And I think that there is like there's like a passive aggressiveness in British people.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Like, it's default.
Just being perfect. British is inherently passive aggressive.
Great. Yeah. I love this for me. And my DNA would also agree that apparently it's fine.
Yeah. Mine too. Yeah.
Mine too. I'm 56%.
Yeah.
British.
No. Yeah. I'm literally like that thing that you sent where it's like, why'd you even take a DNA test? You're white.
And I'm
like,
I got matched. I got an alert that was like, you have new 23andMe relatives. And so I like went and looked and it's like Jerry, cousin Jerry, my second cousin I've never met if you are watching this. But I looked at his DNA breakdown and it was like 99.8% European. And I could tell by the color that it was, that it was, English.
Yeah.
And I was just like, why did you even get your...
I'm 90. Yeah. I literally got one done to see if I was anything besides British.
Yeah. And you're not?
No, I'm like 100% British from like the same region.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Like,
wow.
It's very...
Insular. I mean,
yeah. And my whole family lives over there. It's like... Yeah. I'm very... Yeah. They're all... I'm like first generation American.
Oh,
like
yeah.
They came here, had me, left me here.
Oh, wow. Your mom... So is rude. Your mom...
My mom's there. Yeah. My dad's there. Wow. I have half siblings there, aunts, uncles, grandparents, the whole.
Wow.
Are you the only one?
I'm the only one here.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. It's crazy. Well, not anymore.
Not anymore.
Hey, there you go.
And a husband.
Oh, that's so funny. So when I had my son, because I was adopted, my son, I always joked, I was like, he's the first birth relative I've ever had. Like the first person I've been blood related to.
That's special.
Yeah. I was always like, that's. You know, you're my first blood relative that I've ever
this
known.
My first American relative.
Yeah. Oh,
that.
That's cool. That's cool.
Well, we have to ask because this is my worst date. Do you have a worst date story?
Ooh.
I do have a worst date story.
Oh, amazing.
I'm buckled up. I'm interested.
I was, I probably wasn't even 21 yet. I was like maybe 20.
Okay.
And I had a friend who was going to film school. And I was helping her, Los Angeles Film School, and I was helping her with a project, and there was a guy working on the project and whatever. I was helping her. I was like starring in one of her student films or something. And the next day she was like, oh my God, like blah, blah. Let's call him Joe. I don't know. I can't remember his name. She was like, Joe really likes you. He wants to go on a date with you. And I was like, okay, give him my number, whatever. So he was like, okay, can you come pick me up and I'll take, like, we can go to this restaurant. And I was like, sure. So I pick him up. And on the way, he was like, I don't have reservations. And he was like stressing out. And I was like, okay, well, we can just go somewhere else. And he was like, oh, can we just like go back to my place and I'll figure it out.
No. There it is.
Nope. Red flag immediately.
Exactly. And, but
at 20, I would have been like, that's fine.
Okay. He's like, but, and then I'll call them. And also, I mean, this is probably like 2006 or something. So we didn't have like Google on our phones and stuff. And he's like, I'll go back to my place and I'll find a restaurant for us. And I was like, okay. So we go back and immediately he starts trying to hook up with me.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, we're supposed to be going to eat.
I'm hungry, first of all.
I'm hungry. Yeah. And I was picking you up to go to dinner. That was the plan, not to like come upstairs and freaking hook up.
Right.
And we ended up getting in like a huge fight. It was like this huge, and he was like, no, please stay. Like, I'm sorry. And I was like, no, like, it ended up just being like, I was like, what the, like, I don't even remember,
but
I ended up getting in a huge fight with this kid. I was like not having it.
No.
I smoked cigarettes at the time because it was a rebel. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like smoking cigarettes on his porch, and I was just like, we were just fighting, like full on. It was like I hadn't even had a relationship where I'd like been in like fights yet. Yeah. And I was like fighting with this guy I met
first date. Oh,
yeah, not that long ago.
We haven't even gone to dinner.
Yeah. And he just, and he kept trying to like hook up. And I was like, dude. And so finally I left, and then my friend said he never came back to film school.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Well, that one like, experience was like, no. Yeah, good. He disappeared.
Fuck you, Joe.
Yeah. He packed his shit up and he went back wherever he came from.
You know, some boys just cannot handle rejection.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So, no,
but I will tell you, and good for you for fighting him, because I know the 20-year-old me who was like, ugh, just get it over with.
It'll be easier. Like, I don't want
to
fight. It'll
be easier just to do it and be done and leave.
But I like didn't like him enough. Like, I was just like, yeah. I thought you were taking me to dinner. Like, the whole thing was like, I'll go to dinner. Like, cool. Like, I'll let a guy take me
also, if I'm the littlest bit hungry it's not happening.
I'm like, why do you think that this would work?
Don't
like,
you would have had
right. Yeah. Like, you would have had such a better like chance if you had taken me to dinner first. Yeah. Like, you would have had such a better chance. And it's just such a lame thing to be like, oh, sorry, we need to go back to my apartment. I'm like, this is Los Angeles. There are restaurants everywhere.
Right. Everywhere. And you know what? Make a fucking reservation.
Yeah.
Yes. If that's your whole thing, call the fucking place and make a reservation.
Yeah. Put the tiniest bit of effort in. Ugh. Like, the littlest bit.
No, that seemed like it was his
calculated,
effort.
In hindsight, seemed calculated.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man.
I know. Creeps.
Yeah.
Film guys.
We've all been there. I mean, I wonder if he went to the same film school I did, because I'm like, I moved out here and I went to
LA film school.
Oh, I went to the New York Film Academy.
Oh.
And so I'm
maybe
like,
he transferred.
Maybe.
Oh, the plot thickens.
Oh my goodness.
I really don't remember his name. I like can kind of remember what he looks like vaguely, but like, you know, I'm not really. I remember he lived like off Hollywood and Highland in like a very like, I just moved to Hollywood kind of zone. Oh, so hard.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Man.
And we've all been in that apartment.
Wow. 2001, my first trip to Los Angeles, and we'd stayed off of Hollywood and Highland.
That's
because
right.
You're supposed to, I think.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is awful.
Yeah.
I cried the first time that I went to Hollywood and Highland, which was like shortly after hilarious. I moved here. And I got there and, you know, I'm from Ohio, like, you know, and so Hollywood is this big shining beacon of like, oh my gosh, the
you're
movie stars
and celebrities.
And I got
the
there
snakes
and it just the faint smell of piss and it's like dusty and dirty.
Awful.
There's like sad
Spider-Man everywhere. A million Johnny Depps.
Like, yeah, cry. Yeah.
Oh my god, that's
just
so funny.
Crying because I was like, Hollywood.
I played it just like I did in Columbus when it was like when you were like walking home on campus and you're just passing a bunch of people. I did the no eye contact thing and I was like,
head
eyes
down.
Just real hard, don't fuck with me face.
Yeah.
And that was my Hollywood experience. I was like, oh, it's like this. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And I did have a guy try to sell me a used Kermit the Frog out of a trash bag.
What?
There was a lot happening.
A
I was
lot
like, this is
to digest.
A lot.
Yeah. Yes. We, Josh's aunt and uncle came. They did like a road trip from Oklahoma and they were like, oh, we'll meet you for lunch in Hollywood. And, and so, you know, they wanted to see, they were only here for a few hours and they wanted to see the Hollywood sign. And I was like, okay, well, let's like take them to lunch at CPK because you can see the Hollywood sign from there.
Sure.
And it's like pretty basic food.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, we'll park and meet us outside of Madame Tussauds, which is like right at Hollywood and Highland.
Yeah.
And when we were walking over there and Josh's aunt called him and she was like, please hurry up. I've never seen this many people in my life.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She was genuinely terrified.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we went up to CBK and we got pizza and they were like, can we get pizza with no oregano? And like, we're like Domino's people. Hollywood was a lot for them.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I mean, the culture shock is real. I didn't live in Hollywood when I first moved here, but I didn't come here before moving here. I found my apartment. I knew where I was going to school. And on paper, I was like 5 miles. Oh. I was like, and in Missouri, 5 miles is like absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
So I was like, mm-hmm. oh, it's not very far. Like I could probably even like ride my bike and stuff, uh-huh. right? Like, no, no. Uh-huh. My apartment was in Koreatown and I was going to school in Burbank.
Oh.
And so it was like the 101. Honey. I remember crying on my way home from school because sure. I was stuck in traffic on the 101 mm-hmm. and like deadlocked traffic. And I was just like, crying mm-hmm. because I'm like, I just want to go home. I just want to go home.
It makes or breaks people. If you can make it through that shit, mm-hmm. like you're an Angeleno.
Yeah.
And if you can't, like the city will chew you up and spit you out.
Yeah.
It's just like New York. Yeah. Like my husband is from Oklahoma and he's been here for now like 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you're an Angeleno. Like if you can make it past 10 years, like you are... You're in.
Yeah. I'm almost to 12. It'll be 12 years in January.
See,
thank
you're
you.
An Angeleno.
But I mean, yeah, it's rough going. I tell people that I had a girl, she just turned 21. She's lovely. She was here for a film thing, but she's from Springfield, just lived in Springfield, actually Willard, which is a really small town, her whole life. And she was talking about wanting to relocate. And I was like, look, I'm for you doing it. I was like, I want you to be a little bit more financially stable than I was when I moved out here, but I'm for you like giving this a shot. But, and you have support, you have my support, there are people here, but just know that like, it is going to be hard. Like the first, like however many years are difficult,
right.
you know, but if you can get past that, it can be really beautiful.
It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, we've been looking at new places because, you know, we're having a baby and we're outgrowing our one bedroom. And it's like our in-laws are like, well, look at this house. It's like $1,200 for a 4-bedroom house on like acres of land. And like,
but then you got to live in Oklahoma.
But I'm not going to live in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I'm
going to
live in Oklahoma. I'd rather live in a freaking studio apartment.
I see.
And, but I've born and raised in LA. Yeah. Like it's... Mm-hmm.
It's normal for you
as well. It's normal for me. Yeah. And it's, I don't know. It's like, to me, I'm like, oh, Burbank is a nice quiet town.
That's exactly
I know.
How
I feel. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I want to live in, I want to go to Toluca Lake once I've
retire.
Made it.
Retire
my home in Toluca Lake.
Somewhere nice and quiet, just surrounded by film studios, you know? Yeah. It's like mm-hmm. not really a quiet town, but to me, it's like a nice quiet town.
Yeah.
You know, it's the suburbs.
Yeah.
I was born with the city gene as well. I think there is something.
I'm a city rat.
I am too. I can't handle quiet.
Yeah.
Like if a place that I go to is too quiet, I used to have an app when I traveled, like, and I would be certain places and I would like put on that city
car
noise.
Talking.
Yeah.
Funny.
City noise app. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. even when I grew up outside of Columbus, but I grew up right next to a police station and like, so we would get a lot of like
city
right
sounds.
Right by the street. So we'd always get the cars passing by. To me, that is such a brown noise, like peaceful thing to me. But there's that. I do have that city gene. I need people.
Yeah, I like to do the country mouse thing as a tourist.
Yes.
You know, I'm like, oh, I'm going to like pretend I'm a country mouse for a week. And then I'm like, okay, get me back to the city.
Yeah.
I am like pizza
I can honestly do both.
I'm
ambi.
Me too. You know? Me too. I like them both for different reasons. I've lived in both.
Yeah.
There's pros and cons to both.
I can't ever live in the country again.
My husband's both. He definitely has both sides. Like he could be a mountain man. He could be that really quickly. Like he could really just flip over to that. I can do it. I can be a tourist in that life, but then at some point,
it depends on how bad the world is. I feel like a couple times a year, I'm just like, fuck this. I want a cabin in the mountains. Nobody fuck with me. Like, I don't want to see anybody.
I just want a can thing.
Yeah. I just want to have a garden. I want to be near a creek.
What's funny is I feel like I personally feel like safer in a city than I do in the country.
Me too.
I'm like, when I'm in the country, I'm like, I'm getting murdered.
Anything could happen.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Somebody is going to murder me and nobody's going to hear me
scream.
Nobody's
going to know.
But when I'm in the city, I'm like, there's just somebody smoking crack on the corner. It's
fine.
They're minding their own business. I'm minding my own business.
Exactly.
I don't know what that is.
It's an interesting thing. Like when I first moved here, I still had that mentality of like, a small town, small city. Even though I grew up in Las Vegas, it was like suburbs, and then I moved into a small town in Missouri. Mm-hmm. And so when I got here, I just assumed everything was fine. Like I'd be walking my dog like late at night.
Oh yeah,
outside in like shady areas of Koreatown.
Right,
just assuming that it was fine. And then I had like 3 experiences where like crazy people were interacting with me, and I was like, okay, maybe I shouldn't do this anymore. I was like 20 years old.
There's definitely
like,
some crazy people out there, and you know, I'm super aware of that, but for some reason, my fear instinct just kicks in more in the country.
Me too.
I understand that.
I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm so far away.
Isolation is very scary for
me. Yeah, it's true.
I was saying too, like, I wouldn't mind. I could live a very nomad lifestyle.
Sure.
Like, I am the person who could live in a van, live small, travel. Mm-hmm. I could be that person, but I need to know that there's an escape route out of this small town.
Because
I need to, I need escape is my number one goal. Mm-hmm. But that's why I feel like in a city, I feel safer because I feel like there to me is more escape routes. There's more places to hide. There's more, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's like my zombie apocalypse plan is to stay in the city. I'm like, I'll find a place to burrow and find.
Yeah. Me and Christina are like, I need to be I've seen Walking Dead. I don't want to be in the city when the zombie apocalypse happens.
World War Z.
Coming at you.
No.
No, what I really want to say here is that somebody should give me a lot of money so that I can buy a city house and a country
house.
Girl,
Powerball, $1.6 billion.
Can we split it?
Let's get it. I know.
And you know, I'm winning.
I believe the lottery is cursed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm.
I do. I feel like everybody who wins the lottery loses something.
There is the curse of the lottery. It's true.
Yeah.
But what
unless you give
what
so much
split,
away?
Right?
Yeah. Like, I feel like if you can like... really, you can like counteract the curse by like giving.
Yeah,
which
and
I would.
That's me. Water, money is water in my hands. Yes. I am always like, my issue, I made so much money in my early 20s. And Cass, I know you and I have talked about this. Like, I was a high end waitress and dealing with cash. I mean, making like sometimes like $1,500, $1,600 a weekend or whatever, and in cash and not really having that many bills. Oh, spend it all on my friends. Would just spend it all. Like, let's get a limo and we'll go out to the club or whatever. It was just like, I just wanted to be Captain Good Time. Yeah. And also like, everybody like me. Here's money.
Yeah. I budgeted one time when the lottery was up really high. It wasn't up as high as it is right now, but it was up pretty high. And I literally sat down with like a piece of paper and a pen and I was like, okay, how much would I allot to like each of my friends? Yeah. How much would I allot to my family members?
Yeah.
I could split up the money.
That's the way to do it. You know, my mom always says money comes and money goes.
Yep. So you can't take it with you.
Right. You can't take it with you when you die. Exactly.
That's right.
No. So might as well.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, I would definitely be the person who's like, I have this thing where I'm like, I would love, I like having a purpose. I like working. I like having things to do. For me, the podcast would never end. Nobody would even know I'm rich. But on the side, my job would be to like run a home for, you know, like people who were like escaping abuse or whatever. Like to me, like I would have a purpose driven plan for like a business.
See, I
would
be I always think about that. And then I think in my head, I'm like, and that's why I deserve to win the lottery. Yeah.
Universe,
give me that money.
Like, look, I would do this. Is what I would do with it, and so therefore, I deserve this.
I've earned this.
I've earned this.
Here's my business plan, universe. Please hand me your money.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Oh my gosh!
I'm like, I'm gonna buy a house, pay it off.
Yeah.
Get a little savings account going, and then the rest is for you guys.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't understand. Like, we're all perfectly deserving of that kind of untold wealth.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Well, I have one last thing that I want to ask you, Katie, and that is, do you have any red flags or like serious deal breakers?
Mm. Well,
or did you
like
when you were dating?
My joke answer is like male Geminis. Sorry. Ooh. But oh my God, like Kanye West, Jeffrey Dahmer, Donald Trump. Like it's not looking good for and other people I know. It's just not looking good for male Geminis.
Wow.
But
you're really.
Yeah. I mean, I try not
points.
To be like, look,
made points.
Give me a
try not
argument.
To be an umbrella. I know like there's other elements that come into play. It's just something I've noticed. I don't know. I feel like my red flags have probably changed. I feel like a trust fund person is like, I'd rather have somebody who made their own money than a trust fund person. Because I feel like there's a lot of entitlement in that scene. I've known a few trust fund people and it's just, I don't know. I'm like, there's something you're not getting.
We just talked about that yesterday, actually. Because we were recording an episode yesterday and there was a story with somebody who was presumably rich and pretty entitled. And there is this, I feel like it's difficult to make a relationship like that work unless the trust fund person or the person who grew up with a lot of generational wealth does a lot of work on themselves.
Yeah.
Because if they don't, how could they possibly, like, they just don't understand what it's like to have to.
It's a different reality.
It's a different reality.
It's a completely different world. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those areas in a relationship where there's just a natural overlap because you both existed in the same world just don't exist if you're dating somebody and with wealthy.
It would be difficult to deal with. Like, as somebody who was like poor when I moved out here, I'm like, and there is like lasting stuff to this day. Like to this day, I won't turn down like an event where I know there's going to be food. And I'm like,
you haven't rationed out Top Ramen.
Yes.
Like,
I don't know.
Yeah. Then don't talk to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't have anything to talk about.
Close like, to the ground.
Right. Yes. Like, or on the ground.
If you've made your own money, that's like really awesome.
Yes.
It's like, okay, you've been ambitious, you've worked hard, you've seen both sides of the coin. Like, there's nothing wrong with having money. But I think people who have never known the other side of the coin, at least for me personally, it's a little unrelatable.
Yeah.
I'm sure that like trust fund kids meeting other trust fund kids, match made in heaven. They both understand.
Right.
They speak the same language.
And they have whatever, you know, I'm sure that there are things about their life that are less than perfect that they can relate on. You know, but it's difficult because I try to ride that line and have empathy because I'm like, I know things are rough all over and like suffering is subjective and all of that stuff. But it is difficult when you've been like poor or like you have family that's really poor to hear people complain when you're like, oh my God, like what
and
do you have to complain about?
People who don't ask you any questions about yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you're sitting there and they're like, oh, well, you know, I grew up here and then I did this and then I did that. Yeah. It was really interesting. Like,
cool.
It's got to go both ways. I feel like when you're in a conversation where it's just a lot of output and you're not
getting anything.
You know, that's generally a red flag because I think it's kind of an indicator of like how the relationship will go.
Right.
Yeah.
And it completely shows you how they communicate, which is not
one-sided.
Well. Yeah, it's not one-sided.
Well, I find that too a lot more prevalent, I think, out here in LA because everyone's been made to
They're selling
themselves and to be on.
Yes. Everything feels like a networking thing. It makes me actually very anxious to meet new people now because I'm always kind of like, oh, do I need to be selling? Do I need to be on? Are you on? Do you want something from me? Like, it's always kind of that whenever you meet new people.
I think I used to think that more. And like nowadays I'm like, whatever, I'm like, take it or leave it. If you like me, you like me. If you don't, you don't. But I think when I was younger, I was a little more like, okay, well, like who knows? Like, who I'm going to meet and blah, 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 blah. Now I'm just like, I'm settled in my life enough that I'm just like, if that person doesn't like me, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to like me. I'm not for everybody and exactly everybody's not for me. And
that's a hard lesson to learn as a people pleaser. It really is.
It's very hard. It's so freeing.
Well,
man.
You know, a lot of times it's so freeing. And a lot of times when, you know, it's really not about you.
I know.
Right.
I know.
At the end of the day, if somebody's like, oh, fuck Keegan, I don't like her. It's not really about you.
Yeah.
It's their own thing. They saw something in you that maybe is a challenge for them. Maybe you were really nice and bubbly and it's hard for them to be nice and bubbly. And so it triggered something in them. It's not really about you. It's always
about
them.
I know these things. I'm still like, I can make them.
Going through my divorce and then dating again and like having to deal with ghosting and rejection and stuff. That was the biggest switch flip for me because I come from a very like people pleasing, don't rock the boat, conflict avoidant personality.
Oh, you're a woman.
And like a just a generally reserved introverted Capricorn. It was a real reality check for me. And then once I was like, oh, like I feel comfortable in who I am, and then it's so freeing. It's just the best feeling when you just stop. Not that I don't care what people think, but I don't let it run my life anymore the way I used to.
What are you gonna do?
It's exhausting.
Sing and dance to get you to like me.
Yeah.
You don't like me.
I do have I want people to like me. I do have that thing, but it is funny that quote where it's like, it's none of your business what other people think of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that is good words to live by. Like you don't worry about it.
Right.
Just don't assume everybody likes you and your life will be so much easier.
Yeah. And if you know, I think like also the lesson for me was like, well, I know that like if I am true to myself. And I know that like, I don't go into any situation with bad intentions, right?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
I'm never trying to hurt you. I'm never trying to offend you. If I do, I'm sorry. If you don't accept that, there's nothing I can do. I can go to sleep tonight knowing that like, I didn't have the intention of hurting you. Mm-hmm. And like, it, you know, hopefully I never do offend or hurt anybody because it's genuinely never my intention. But if somebody just doesn't like me and it's like I showed up as my best self and I did everything I could to be kind and, you know, to be fair and generous and you don't like me, then what can I do?
Yep. Yeah, nothing you know,
I'm not going to lose sleep over it.
That's right.
So
I might lose an hour still, but like a little bit.
It really depends on the situation because like we've had this conversation before. Like if I'm a good friend to you and you throw that away, then absolutely
you're dead to me.
You're dead to me. I can cut somebody out like so fast.
Pisces.
Yeah.
You don't say.
It's true.
I'm an Aries. I am literally like the epitome of like the dog with a wagging tail. Like, oh, you've hit me. That's okay.
I'll come back.
I'll come back.
Fiery little suckers.
But we love you so much.
Yeah.
It's been amazing having you.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Amazing energy.
It's so fun talking to you ladies. Yeah. And thank you so much for having me. And you know,
tell us where people can find you, find your music.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. We have a great website that my Pisces bandmate has made. It's theblushes.com. We're on Instagram, The Blushes Band. Those are probably the best ways to kind of stay up to speed with us. We're on Spotify. We just released our first single. It's called Me Time, and it's about enjoying me time and like not giving a shit what anybody thinks about you.
Love it.
There you go.
And we have a bunch of new music that we've recorded and we're getting ready to release throughout the next few months. We kind of got a bunch of stuff in the canon, which is great because it'll go through my pregnancy. So I got stuff going on as I go through the pregnancy. So it kind of worked out really well. And we play shows all around LA and I'm going to keep playing shows even as I...
That's awesome.
Yeah. Grow.
You should.
You know, we're like kind of this like feminist band. And I'm like, you know what's more womanly and powerful and feminine
punk rock
than being I can't super wait. Pregnant?
That's I can't awesome. Wait to see your pregnancy, your maternity show clothes.
Well, we'll see.
It could be amazing.
Crop tops, bikini tops.
Yeah. I love it.
Do it. I love it. And then personally, where can people find you, follow you?
I'm Katie from The Blushes on Instagram. Katie Jane Earl is, you know, just has always been my stage name since that first set of headshots. you know, I'm on The Mowglies. You can find me through anything on, you know, related or connected to them. And
The Mowglies is such feel good music. If you've never listened to The Mowglies, you can find them on Spotify. Your stuff comes on my mixes all the time. It's so great.
That was definitely the intention of that project. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, we are so, I'm beside myself. I'm so excited to like actually sit down with you. Like I said, we've seen you in things and in passing, but it's been great to like sit down and have a conversation with you.
The pleasure's all mine, ladies. Thank you so much for having me. That was really fun.
Yay. Well, we love you so much.
Cheers.